It's Friday, February 10th, 2017. You're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast about retro video games, and sometimes some other things. This is episode 174, Adventures in Hyper-Realistic Plumbing. Runtime for this episode is 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Hello and welcome. It's us, Last Time on Video Games. My name is Jeremy.
That was going to be my joke. Damn you, I'm Tyler.
You guys are idiots.
Thanks.
Just wanted to make sure I got that out nice and early. And my
Zach
name is Zach.
Is a bully. He likes to think he's the hero of his own story, but really he just likes to put other people down.
Hey, I like being in my own little world because I am one hell of a big deal there.
Yeah, because it's a very little world. You're literally a big deal. You're occupying most of the space.
Ain't it great?
No. Or unless you're asking me to integrate with your own little world, which okay. Guys also know.
It's okay, Tyler. One day you may be as awesome as I am.
I feel like that would be a substantial step down, so I'm glad that I have a while to go before I lose that much. The fall is going to hurt.
Speaking of the fall, what video games have you been falling into bottomless pits in, Tyler?
Actually none. No bottomless pits in any of the games I've been playing, unless you count pits that have bottoms but are very large.
What about games with pit? Where you're fighting Medusa.
Nope, no games with Pit. I've actually not been playing any Smash. That is actually, now that I think about it, kind of odd. I've been playing mostly Work is Busy, but in the meantime, I've beaten Pokemon since the last time we recorded.
Yay!
Is the ending any different than the one in Sun?
I don't know. What's the ending in Sun?
Lily was the main character all along.
Yeah. And also, Nebby is secretly a ghost.
And then she goes to Kanto to find Bill because she read once he got fused with the Pokemon, and so maybe he can help her mom.
Who is sick of
being merged with the Pokemonitis.
Wait, is
or
she?
An Ultra Beast. She's like merged with an Ultra Beast or something like that, or at least that's
yeah,
what it looked
like
at the end of
jellyfish
it.
Jellyfish her?
Yeah, I assumed you kicked the jellyfish out of her when you beat her in a Pokemon battle.
Yeah, it turns out that's not a medical cure for being fused with a...
It's a
jellyfish.
Cure for everything else in that game.
I didn't quite get that out of it, but maybe I was just missing something.
So is she like sick
and
bedridden at the Aether Foundation? Can I go visit her or something?
No, you can go visit her between that and beating the Elite Four, but after Lily leaves, if you go back, that one other woman who is more reasonable.
Wick?
Yeah, will be like, hey, have this TM. Also, she wants to go hang out with Bill because he got fused with Pokemon once. Galadian will be like, my theme music is awesome. Have this Pokemon.
I thought this
theme music is pretty badass.
I thought Lily went to Kanto to do her own Pokemon journey.
Yeah, I
Kanto.
Thought she went to Kanto to like be less
yeah,
lame.
Yeah, but she chose Kanto because she read about Bill once.
Okay. Bill's autobiography. This one time I got fused with Pokemon. This
if
kid
you remember,
a
I actually
me.
Mentioned that the next game I hope actually goes back to Kanto yeah, was because of that.
You want to find Lily? You want her to be on the Elite Four?
No, I actually kind of want Lily to be involved. Like maybe actually have her as
she
your
can be
rival.
The main character again.
No, you be your rival.
That would be cool. What if you're a girl?
Same thing. You don't actually have to have it be any
gender
different.
Swapped rivals. We can get rid of those. Can we have rivals that are actually a threat again?
That would be nice.
Gary's still the best because he just wants to be your friend and has terrible social skills.
But also, he's got a decent Pokemon team.
Yes. He's good at Pokemon, not socializing. And also, hanging out with Team Rocket all the time.
I feel
isn't
like
a rival in Silver and Gold.
Yeah, I feel like Silver's not bad.
He's kind of a jerk. He is competent, but then he kind of becomes less competent near the end.
It's Twist rival in the third gen because you have a rival who turns out to be lame, and then the guy who wasn't your rival is suddenly like super competitive all of a sudden.
Yeah, but he still only has 4 Pokemon.
Yeah, okay.
One of them can Mega Evolve in the remakes, so.
I literally do not remember your rival in fourth gen. Never played fifth gen.
Your rival in fourth is your, you know, love interest character again. It's like in third, but you don't get a good rival later.
And in 6th gen, there's Az. He's your rival.
No, there's also neighbor person. I like that one okay.
Yeah, Callum, because obviously why wouldn't you play as, I don't even, Serena? I think it's actually Serena.
It is Serena.
Which is why I named her Serena. Serena! That's my nickname with the group of friends, as everyone's like, hey, Serena!
I forgot you have a nickname in that game. Like, what a weird choice.
That is just weird.
Well, because you don't have a rival. You have a group of friends and your neighbor who's like, I'm going to be a better neighbor than you are. So, yes, I beat Pokemon. That was the thing. I actually lost to the proto-champion, not quite the champion. Oh, actually, can we talk about the, like, golfer from nowhere?
So you fight the first person, you're like, yeah, that's who I expected to be in the Elite Four. I kind of wish there was someone new, but okay. You fight the second person, like, yeah, this is okay. You fight the third person, you're like, well, that's not quite what I expected, but makes sense.
That's kind of cool.
Or I like how they try to get Nanu there, and he's like, ah, I don't want to do it. Make my niece do it.
Again,
like, it's a character, right?
And that niece is a cool character, so. But then you get to the fourth person, and you're like, wait.
Who are you?
Pretty golfer? Pretty and golfer you, Serena.
You use flying Pokemon. Who are you?
And I was looking forward to seeing Hapu again. I don't really like the character, but I do like the idea that, you know, three of the five best champions of the world being 11, so at least it's consistent.
Which one's Hapu?
The new Kahuna.
Oh, the ground type?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, ride my cool horse. It can walk on rocks.
That would have been... Yeah, that would have been interesting. Or if it had been the grass trainer or the water.
I would
trainer.
Have done the fire guy. He's cool. I like
him. Well, I mean, but having the consistency like Jeremy was talking about, be the grass or the water type.
So there's a side quest of the fire guy in Sun and the grass lady in Moon, and the fire guy loses his part-time job and is sad. And it's just like, wow, thanks, quest. Now I feel great.
What?
He works part-time at, like, the market near him.
Yeah,
and he's, like, saving up for something. I can't remember what.
He wants to go to dancing school in other countries.
Yeah. He gets laid off because he only works part-time. The manager's like, I can't afford a part-time guy, and I don't want to lay off one of the full-time guys. So I'm laying you off. And he's like, I'm sad. Let's battle our Pokemons.
Fiery dance spirit. Do you know what other girl fights you over?
I do not.
Okay. I assume it's like, I finally made a reasonable meal. It doesn't suck.
Does his Salazzle just kind of pop out of nowhere?
No.
That's not actually his Salazzle. It's a wild Pokemon he trained to be a totem Pokemon by, like, feeding it Salazzle candy.
I kind of assumed that the totem Pokemon were actually their trained Pokemon.
But, like, the dragon doesn't have a trainer at the end.
The totem Pokemon is, like, imbued by the spirit of the land or something, and they just are, like, its keepers.
I feel like, what's her name, would use a Mimikyu in her Elite Four battle, if that was the case. What were your thoughts on the story?
I actually liked it fairly well. I just wish it had been more and also earlier.
Or about you?
No,
I don't mind it not being about me, but it's super weird how tangential your character is and how he could not exist. They're just copying this plot for the current anime plot, but they're putting Ash Ketchum in place of you, and that doesn't seem like it's going to change many.
Our mom just got sucked into this alternate dimension. Everyone's all horrified, and your character's just sitting there with a smile.
Well, although, did you notice in a couple of the ending cutscenes, your character has different facial expressions all of a sudden? Like, they clearly animated some, but they didn't have time to put them elsewhere in the game, so they're like...
And to be fair, Hao has no place in the story either. I'd argue even less place, because at least Lily seems to, like, depend on you, sort of.
Yeah, you're at least competent.
he does admit that he cheated his way off the first island.
Wait, does he? What?
At one point, I think after you beat him in the Elite Four, he mentions he was going to go back and actually do it right.
Well, I think he means, like, because the first time you fight his grandpa, he does not use his Elite Four team. I thought it was more he was talking about, I'm going to fight my grandpa for real.
Yeah, that's
but
what
But you would
I got.
Think he would have to actually fight the Elite Four to get to you? Did he? I don't know.
Yeah.
Although have you fought the Elite Four again yet?
No.
So
no.
Do you know about the change to that?
No.
Instead of fighting Kakui, you sit on your champion chair. And someone else comes
sweet.
And challenges you.
Yeah, you get your bitchin' chair.
Wait,
you sit on the iron ice throne.
But you have to fight the Elite Four again?
Yes.
Yes.
But I'm already the champion. Like, I don't...
You need that money XP.
I always thought it would be really cool if after you became champion, people would, like, just challenge you. That would be awesome. So...
You get, like, a call on your Pokemon tracker from wherever it is you're happening to be dicking around in the world. And then
yeah,
go
someone
back.
On the Elite Four, whoever is the Elite Four secretary, calls you up and says, hey, we got another challenger. We better get here because they've got a fire type and they're blown through our ice type trainer already. So
they call you up and they're like, hey, you might want to get over here and put this 10-year-old in his place because us 30-year-olds can't.
Yeah, did you see the Pokemon Generations episode that's just Blue defeating the Elite Four and is basically that?
No, I did not.
Pretty good.
I have read Pokemon Special where Lance is like an asshole.
Well, yeah, so. Where they're eco-terrorists.
Pokemon. I like that game. I'm probably still going to play more of it. I want to beat Zach, but I need a good team.
So do I.
I think my team sucks.
I need to spend any time training my team. I've been doing other stuff. But before I talk, well, let's just talk about Pokemon first. I got all 100 TMs.
Yay.
Yeah, and I have 99 of 100 Zygarde cores. Or cells, cool. I guess. I need one more. I don't know where it is. It is somewhat frustrating.
So I have a question.
Did you go all the way
back
to the first island and get the one that's across the bridge?
Yes, the one that's...
outside the Tapu area?
Yes, I did get that one.
So I have a question about the Zygarde. Because you have multiple cells, can you make multiple lower percentage Zygardes?
You can. You can make like 10% Zygardes if you want.
Because I imagine lower percentage Zygardes aren't banned because they're kind of lame by comparison to full Zygarde.
It depends on the competition. I believe they are in Smogon, but that's because their ability turns them into 100% Zygardes.
Oh.
They are lame. Not by the official Pokemon competitive rule set rules. They're in the legendary categories, so you get one, but they do count as your legendary. There is a reason you would choose it over 100% form that someone came up with. But I can't remember what the strategy is.
Or Kyogre.
No,
or
it's Rayquaza. Groudon.
Groudon's better than Kyogre. You could go Rayquaza. Rayquaza's super stupid yet. Yeah. but the thing is, Omega Rayquaza, whatever it's called, Primal Kyogre stops fire moves, which it's already resistant to. Primal Groudon stops water moves.
Oh.
They just fail.
Oh, that's useful.
Yes, so,
yeah, that's why Groudon, not Kyogre.
And he has a good moveset and stupid good stats. I know in the double battle meta, he was by far the best legendary. I don't know if he's better than Rayquaza in...
single?
Yeah.
I challenge you to single combat. Trial by Dragon.
What else have you been playing?
A lot of the Lawn Dark, actually. I finally found and... I found bears before. Historically, I've edged around bears because they will kill you.
Bar!
To death. I found one at night, right as a blizzard was kicking up, and it, like, saw me and started walking towards me. I'm like, I'm gonna shoot it. So I pulled out my bow. I finally have a bow,
you
by the way.
You don't have a gun?
I have a gun.
In a drawer to defend you from bear attacks?
No, I have a gun in a drawer. It was just in my drawer, and I was nowhere near that drawer. It's heavy. And
you don't want to carry the drawer around with you.
I'm sorry. That was a joke and a reference to something I guess you guys haven't seen.
No, apparently not. No, actually, like, one of the biggest, like, concerns in that game is, like, constant fatigue from carrying too much stuff all the time. But, like, I'm wearing so much clothing because it's so cold out that's occupying, like, 3/4 of my carrying capacity.
So you mean you can't do what I was always doing in 7 Days to Die? Carrying about 16 different beverages, 13 different types of food, 3 guns and their attendant ammunition, and then whatever I happen to find in the wild?
Yeah, no, that's heavy. You can't do that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, pretty sure. So you can actually go over your carrying capacity. You just become increasingly slow and your sprint starts dying out. Eventually, you can't sprint at all.
That's how most games do overcarry capacity.
Because I can't carry my gun around because it weighs 4 keys and I've only got 30 keys.
What kind of gun is it?
It's like an old ass hunting rifle.
Oh, okay. That makes sense then. Cause for whatever reason, I was picturing like some kind of just handgun.
Nah.
It's like, this thing weighs this 4 kilograms. The hell kind of a gun are you carrying around?
He's a Vegeta. He uses a weighted gun for training so that when he uses the real thing, his aim would quick draw would be much faster.
It's literally a hand cannon.
Yeah. A small cannon you carry around in your hand. So I whip out my bow. And I'm getting ready to face down this bear, because a lot of the wildlife, if they're already stalking you, once you, like, aim a weapon at them, will, like, charge you. So you only have a couple moments to, like, actually shoot them.
Can you climb up a tree?
No, although you can, like, run up rocks. Like, a lot of the trees, they're, like, lodgepole pines, so they don't have low branches. So, also the game, I don't think, has mechanics for that. But even if it did, the trees would be unclimbable, given the shape of them. Anyway, so the bear doesn't start charging me, which I find kind of weird, and I lose an arrow. But it's really windy, and my aim's off, so the arrow goes flying to the left of the bear. And for some reason, I don't understand, this hungry-ass bear in the middle of the Canadian wilderness, who would very much like to eat me, gets scared of this stick that flies off to his left, and bolts. I'm like, okay, well that's weird.
Stick!
Yeah, I guess if he's gonna run away, I'm gonna go chase him down, because I need, like, bearskin pelts are super valuable, because you can make really awesome equipment out of them. So I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go hunt down that bear. And I get ready to, like, begin this long chase, because the bear's booking it, right? And, like, there's no way in hell I can keep up with it, so I'm preparing to track it through a blizzard overnight. So already this is a bad idea, now that I'm thinking about it.
You know, it's faster to just eat the barrel of your gun, right?
yes. Well, I had plenty of food and, like, wood, and so, like, I wouldn't have died, probably. I would have gotten very lost, though. So I get ready to start chasing down this bear, so I, like, go pick up my arrow, and I round the corner, and there's the bear, running, glitched through part of the rock, which is weird, because this game has so few glitches. Like, the worst glitch I've encountered is it will occasionally recalculate a bunch of stuff, like, every so often it does, like, a tick. And if you're on a hill, sometimes it'll be like, oh, you're on an incline. You must have fallen a little bit and you suddenly sprained your ankle. And you're like, well, that was really annoying considering I was walking down this gentle slope just a moment ago. So this is like the first like weird clipping issue I've ever seen in this game. And there's this bear just kind of stuck, like its shoulder stuck on the rock. So I walk up to him like, huh, well, I guess I'll just shoot it to death now. So I, like, draw an arrow and miss. Point blank range. Miss.
That sounds like your aim.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to get too close to it, so I wasn't actually point blank. And my character's not very good at shooting bows and arrows because I never had to do it. It misses. I shoot another one. This one also misses because I misjudge how much of the rock it's clipping through. Like the rock is visibly taking up more space, or not taking up as much space as it is visibly. Other way around. Like the hitbox of the rock is larger than its visual box. Finally, on the fourth arrow that I have, which is the last arrow I have on me, I manage to shoot the bear once in the head, which kills it, apparently, which I wasn't expecting because it's a giant-ass bear, and it had, like, 35 keys of meat on it. I took basically none of that. I kind of wasted the bear corpse.
You're the opposite of a Native American.
Yeah, well, I would have taken all of it, except it's heavy. What am I going to take?
Cold survivors waste 100% of the bear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Alex and I were actually talking about this. You know, I'm wearing a coat. It's not that cold out. Why can't I just, like get the coat underneath the bear and drag it? Like, I don't know. That's what I'd do. You can't really do that in a video game. Jeremy, what have you been Pokemoning?
Just Pokemon, actually.
Oh, well.
I watched all of Dragon Ball Z Kai, and by all of, I mean the rest of.
Where are they up to? Or did they just finish the...
Okay, well, I watched the original run, which was through the Cell Saga. There is a run through the Buu Saga, but the dub isn't really super available yet. They just started it on Toonami, and I think it's going on sale on DVD in, like, April.
Okay.
They're doing it alongside Dragon Ball Super on Toonami, which is weird to me, but
yeah.
That's what they decided to do.
Well, you gotta confuse those new viewers.
Oh, no, that's confusing for new people, but if you're, like, an older person and nostalgic, then you can watch both.
I did watch the two episodes of Dragon Ball Z Kai that have been on Cartoon Network so far, and they're just Videl and Gohan being a superhero. And I'm like, yeah, this is what... Why isn't this all Dragon Ball Z was the entire time? Is Videl and Gohan flirting poorly and being superheroes. I don't even remember Videl having a helicopter that she used to chase
runaway buses with
crooks shooting at her. But that sure happens, and man... Is it good?
I don't remember this at all, but that's awesome.
I actually kind of stopped watching around the Buu Saga, so...
Yeah, well, I remember the Great Saiyaman, and I
was gonna say, Gohan is my favorite character, because he sees some robbers with machine guns, and is like, well, clearly I have to be a superhero. I will go to the richest person on Earth and have her design me a superhero costume, and now I am just a superhero. It's gonna get me laid.
I didn't think Videl made his superhero costume.
No, Bulma does.
Yeah, she's the richest person on Earth.
I guess Mr. Satan is actually richer than Bulma.
How?
Because he's the champ! He's the best! He saved the world from Cell!
Yeah, but Bulma's...
He's got all the marketing deals! He endorses everything! He tap... You don't think He Tap's paying Mr. Satan all sorts of money?
No, I don't, because Bulma's basically Tony Stark.
Bulma's dad is Tony Stark. She's just also really, really smart. He made all the money. She just inherited it. She could have made money if she wasn't already rich and bothered to sell any of her inventions.
That is true. She just makes stuff. That's true.
Yeah, Team Swarstar was talking about how they wish Bra or Bulma would just become Iron Man with, like, the android power-absorbing stuff and the Frieza henchman
right?
guns.
Right? Wouldn't that be so cool?
Imagine if Bra was Iron Man, but if you tore open her suit, she went Super Saiyan. That would be the best.
That would be pretty awesome.
Is that canonical? Is she a Super Saiyan?
She's not a Super Saiyan.
Are there any female Super Saiyans?
Not yet, but there was just a preview for Dragon Ball Super, and the next arc of Dragon Ball Super is going to be like a multiversal tournament where universes are getting destroyed, and one of the enemies they're facing is just a female Broly, which is pretty cool. She's got a really good design.
Yeah, I can dig that. Speaking of interdimensional tournaments, did you see the DBZ Abridged episode of Yu Yu Hakusho versus Cell?
The animation wasn't quite as good as that. I wish that was just part of an episode of Dragon Ball Z Abridged, but it was pretty good. My spirit gun can destroy an S-class demon, and my sword can rip through dimensions. So which one can destroy the planet? Because I can do that with my finger. Guabara, we're going home.
And Kubar's like, yeah, you weren't even worse at the time. And he's like, shut up, Kubar.
He's like, there are two things I can't resist, which is beating up bad guys and competing in tournaments. So here we are. It was pretty good. So what have you been playing, Zach?
Played some League of Legends. I had a decent game against a bottom lane Ziggs.
I don't know who Ziggs is.
He's a Yordle with bombs. He throws a lot of bombs and stuff.
What is a Yordle?
It's a hobbit.
Okay.
Only the girls are sexy.
It's a fuzzy hobbit.
Okay, but the girls you've explained this concept to me before.
It was Ziggs Brand versus my Varus and a support Kled. And
okay,
we
when
won.
You said Ziggs Brand, I'm like, what, he had his own line?
Ziggs Brand Heaton.
But, I mean, we did well. I've been playing a few games of that. Or I played some more Metal Gear Solid 5. I actually did the level in which you have to kill the man on fire. I had to kill the son of a bitch 3 times.
The one where you have to knock him in the water?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I did the level, and for one thing, I really hate not having control over some of those cinematics, because I would have shot Skullface cinematic right before then.
That's a matter of the story hasn't done a good enough job of bringing you into it. And I talked earlier about how one of the things that makes Metal Gear Solid 5 to me super, super interesting is all of its inherent conflicts with itself. And one of them is definitely it's an open world game that's trying to present you with options and how you tackle your challenges with a super prescribed story that gives you no choice at all.
He's right there. He's the bad guy. He's the guy that has caused me all of my annoyance.
Yes, Zach,
and pain.
I've DM'd before. I know you would have kicked him in the nuts the moment he said, "Ah, you are there."
I would have done it.
Skullface walked in. You would have said, "Don't I get a perception check to see if I saw him before that?"
I would have shot him before he noticed me.
See, exactly. Don't I get a stealth check to see if he noticed me?
He gets his line of, "Oh, it's you," after I've put a hole in the side of his head.
To be fair, his head doesn't seem to be his weak spot.
That is true. Wouldn't stop me from trying. I ran out of there because Man on Fire showed up. And so I ran out of the compound and blew up one of the water towers with one of my C4. More to see if I could do it.
Okay.
Because I remember there was a fight somewhere along the line with the guy, but I didn't know if this was it. And I was curious if I could destroy the water tower. So I burned a C4 package trying to see what would happen. Found out that yes, I could. Then I caught him with the other water tower. Fulton extracted him, and then went, okay, now I can go walk over to my chopper and leave this place. And then it blew up the exit tunnel, and I went, okay, fine, whatever, that's annoying, but I'm just going to call in my chopper and pick me up. And then it was like, Man on Fire's still here, and I'm like, where did he come from?
That's the fight where you don't actually kill him. You kind of can, but what you actually have to do is kind of time it so the chopper shows up while he's down.
Yeah, which was really awkward. I lost the fight the first time because of that, because he was not down long enough after being dunked with a water tower.
He destroyed my chopper.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what happened to me, too.
Because he was already gone via the Fulton extraction.
Yeah, that's weird, and I'm not sure how that happened. Because I've done the Fulton extraction bit, and you can get rid of him that way. So
it was
I don't
because
know if something
it
triggered.
It oh no! Because the stupid tunnel being destroyed was triggering him to come back.
Or actually, did you kill the psychic guy? Did you shoot at the psychic guy? Because if you try to Fulton extract him, there's the Psycho Mantis will show up, and he will actually cut the Fulton parachute, and you won't get extracted.
He was gone.
Okay,
he flew out of there.
Okay, that's weird, because I don't even remember that tunnel explosion, although I believe you that it happened.
Yeah, because you have to take a different way out, and then you can never take that way back in, which is unfortunate, because it's the most convenient way to get there.
And then he killed me, because I was low on resources and trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Then the second time I spawned, blew him into the water, called the chopper, and left.
That's too bad, because I actually really like that fight. It's good at presenting you with a few ways to deal with him. There is that pool of water you can knock him into. There are the various water towers. It's a good set piece boss.
The fact that you have to know to have ordered your chopper before knocking the tower down.
Yeah, it's not communicated well.
You should just have a long enough stun time that you have time to order the chopper afterwards. Because in that fight, I'm like, okay, well, I have no chance of beating this guy, so I'm just leaving. And even knowing that, I didn't have enough time to leave.
I was just annoyed by the fact that I solved the problem. Then it was like, screw you!
You didn't solve the problem
the
right way.
And then when I respawned, I didn't have, a good chunk of my resources.
That's weird, because I thought it loads you at the save point and you have everything.
It loads you at the checkpoint.
Oh, and that's where you...
And that was after the destruction of the tunnel, which I didn't have most of my C4.
That's bad flagging and bad checkpointing. Because it probably shouldn't let you do anything to him until you trigger that cutscene, if you have to trigger it.
That was, like I said, my annoyance, because I had to deal with him twice.
That's too bad, because that's maybe the best boss fight in that game. There's one with the giant mech that's also pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, have you had to run away from Soho Lanthropus while carrying...
Yeah, that part's here. He would have already passed. Where you're okay. Saving the scientist and the,
yes,
the mech comes after you.
That was interesting.
That's not really a boss fight.
That was, here's the chopper's minigun. Remember, it actually has a minigun on it.
Well,
you
I
get
just,
to use it now.
I just thought it was really tense trying to get the hell out of there with Huey?
Yeah, I do like that sequence. I just wouldn't call it a boss fight.
Oh, man.
I didn't even think it was particularly tense, because those walkers move so fast.
Oh, you use a walker. No, I was on foot.
Yeah, so. I did the smart thing.
Grabbed
you
stole
walker.
One of their walkers. And
yes.
Just, see, I did that, but I couldn't figure out how to do the transport mode, so I felt they were pretty slow.
You can
so
pick him up.
Yeah, I know.
That's all I did, is I just picked him up and ran off.
No, were you using this fast mode on the walkers, or are you just walking out?
There's a fast mode?
Oh, yeah, because I feel like they walk really slow. Maybe it's just your custom walker that has that.
Mine felt like it moved fast enough that I was able to just kind of trot out. And then we're going to use the minigun to destroy this big old walker. I'm sitting there going, let's leave.
Yeah, just run. It can't jump very high. You're
I did
fine.
Call, I did call in my first ever airstrike and my last ever airstrike because that was pathetic.
The sleeping gas airstrikes are pretty useful, but.
No, that was pathetic. It was like, here's the airstrike. Okay, I'm going to center it right on the four guys that are chasing me, and it hit one dude.
Yeah, I never called in airstrikes. I instead called in chopper support, because having a chopper gunner just sitting there is pretty damn useful. They'll take out entire buildings for
you. It was
you.
Just pathetic. I actually spent more time this week playing the Criminal Girls on Steam.
Yeah, I saw that you broke down and bought that.
I didn't break it down and bought that.
That seems like a game that defies our rating. I don't know anything about it.
It's not as bad. It ended up getting censored because of stupid reasons.
It is very cheesecake, though.
It, of course, took about a week for modders to basically remove all the censorship that was in the game.
When something like that gets censored, it's almost certainly because they think it will sell better if it's censored than because...
No,
it
was censored that was part of it, but it was initially censored because evidently the ESRB said if they had it rated, it would be rated AO.
Okay, that's also that's also a sales reason, right? Because games that are rated AO do not sell.
And they don't sell. You can't put them on
Steam.
Having played it, it's like there's absolutely no reason this needed to be censored. It's actually got kind of an interesting combat system. You have four characters that can engage at any one time.
What sort of game is it?
It's like a dungeon crawler.
Okay, so Eye of the Beholder. Again, none of us have played.
You have a party of characters. And
what game would you compare it to? Final Fantasy VI?
I'd say it's closest to a Final Fantasy would be my guess. But it's hard to say because it's just a straight up dungeon crawl. Combat is you get four options. Each of your characters gives you an option.
That's
kind of
interesting.
To pick between those.
Okay, that's neat.
So you don't always have the perfect option for a situation because your characters are all disagreeing on what you should be doing about it.
That's interesting. That's actually kind of like Until Dawn. Although I think it's better for a horror game or a comedy game if this is a comedy element.
It's mostly a comedy.
It's mostly a comedy game.
Yeah.
I was actually... So I think the best way to sum up its art style, and really maybe the entire game, is I watched the trailer for it, and Alex is like, why is that girl's boobs blushing? Because he knows they do that thing to make them appear vivacious that, give them blush on, all their contours, basically. Like, it's a standard,
anime
sexy girl
trope. I know exactly what sort of art you're talking
about. But there's an exceptionally large-chested girl wearing...
Only one?
Yep.
Well, actually, there really is only one of the... I think there's one more character.
Exceptionally large-chested. Okay. They're all large... Well, most of them
one
are
One who's
large.
Rocking, H-cups. Got yeah.
It. It's 50-50.
But there's, part of the cutscene, she's in, a, cleavage-exposing shirt, and Alex is like, why are her boobs blushing? So, if you've watched a lot of anime or have consumed a lot of anime-type material, you know exactly the art style I'm talking about.
Your characters have to learn skills through minigames. You gotta go through a lot of these minigames and not learn a lot of skills and try and figure out what the best option is in a lot of the fights.
Yeah, eventually we're gonna play Final Fantasy X, and I really don't know what I think about having minigames be one of the major power-up mechanics. I bring up 10 because things like Blitzball and Chocobo Racing are how you get the ultimate weapons, which isn't something you need to do in that game, but...
Have you seen the Honest Game trailers on Final Fantasy X?
No, but it does have a thing about...
Yeah, it actually only came out recently. They're like, unlock your ultimate weapons through mind-numbing minigames, like dodging 300 consecutive lightning bolts.
It's only 200, but yeah, that is just pressing X 200 times while you listen to a podcast or something. But anyway, go on.
I've got, like, I think 6 hours what Steam said I had in. I've beaten the first dungeon area. I think there's one character I'm currently missing. How to say, I don't think it should have been necessarily censored, but I don't think it's a I don't necessarily think it's a great game. The progression mechanics I find kind of interesting. And then because
they come up with better ideas as you move on.
Your characters don't use items. So you can use one item per turn, but it doesn't take away your action.
Is the player a character?
Yes.
Okay.
The player is a character, but they are like the party lead.
So they are Tenshi, and they can't do anything. And only the girls can do things, but you can use an item?
As it is called Criminal Girls, your character is basically the warden. Like, that is the best way I can think of to put it.
This is a game I'm happy I'm not playing.
It's not as bad as it sounds.
I mean, it can be as bad as it sounds in my imagination forever.
I can understand why Zach is playing this game, and why I am not playing this game.
I'm not sure what to think about that.
I'm not judging.
Anything else you've been playing that we can judge you on, Zach?
See, I didn't play any Senran and Kagura this week.
Now, that just sounds like a dirty game. I don't know what any of that means.
But... No, it just came out, and they already have a cooking minigame spin-off game.
Actually,
that sounds great.
It's actually been out for a long time. It was initially that one and this other one are both Vita games as well.
How long until we end up playing one of the Toho Project games and have to eat our words, Tyler?
But
fair enough.
If you're interested in like anime-style dungeon crawlers, I'd say give it a look. I think it's $20 on Steam.
You could also buy Tales of Phantasia.
I think it's kind of fun just as a game, especially for if you're not trying to think about anything too hard, because the game will basically be like, hey, do this.
Anything else, Zach?
LCS started up again.
Yes, I'm lost a game.
They lost to Cloud9.
That's literally the only LCS thing.
Yeah, they lost to Cloud9. They haven't played Cloud9 yet, though.
What? What?
The LCS has a team that is Cloud9.
Yes.
They
also have the team formerly known as Cloud9.
Yeah, and there's also a team that is called FlyQuest, which contains Cloud9's first top laner, Cloud9's original mid laner, and Cloud9's original support.
Cloud9 still has their original AD carry. I don't know what happened to their jungler. He, like, retired. He was too good for this world. Or he had to go fight the Saiyan threat. Maybe he's training for the androids.
Are the Koreans the androids?
Yes. The Koreans, going to Korea to train was the hyperbolic time chamber. And just like Vegeta and Trunks, it didn't work. Well, that brings us to the game for this week, which is Super Mario 64. It's not even Super Mario 64, is it?
I think it's labeled as Super Mario 64.
Because it's got the rainbow.
You're right.
And that's what it's listed as on the Wii U Virtual Console.
All right, Super Mario 64, which is a game that's going to be very hard to talk about, because Zach didn't really care for it and didn't play a whole lot of it. And I am so deep in this game, it's actually kind of difficult to talk about. Playing this game is like breathing to me. I don't have to think about it. It just happens.
Therefore, I must be in the sweet spot.
I suppose. It's also a game that doesn't hold up incredibly well. This is more of a final thought, but I'm just going to say, if you're interested in game history, absolutely play this game. It's a very important one. If you're looking for a cool game to play, maybe this isn't the one. Super Mario World or 3 are probably better.
Or Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah. Or Banjo-Kazooie.
If you're looking to have fun...
I think this game is pretty fun, but we should start at the beginning, and this game really lacks a hook. Because the hook of this game is basically, it's the new
3D.
Mario game. Which, if you don't care about Mario, and if you're one of the teens these days, you probably don't.
Well, it also doesn't really... Bowser kidnapped Peach, but at the beginning of it, you just see the letter of, Mario, I baked you a cake!
But it doesn't
actually... show Bowser kidnapping her like it does in the later...
In the newer Mario games?
Yeah, so Bowser shows up, kidnaps Peach, and so you're like, God dang it, I want to go beat Bowser and get Peach back. You know, It actually makes it your problem. Instead, you get there, and it's like, there's nobody here.
Speaking of...
It doesn't even tell you Bowser kidnapped her. It's just empty. The tower is just empty.
Yeah, and then you go talk to a Toad, and it's like... Mario! Peach has been kidnapped by something that looks like Bowser, but is horribly deformed!
You need to go jump into this bomb painting on the lower level. Okay, so it's down here, right? No, the lower level!
I'm on the lower level. There's nothing down there.
No, up here on the lower level.
We'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to talk about the other hook this game had, which is it was legitimately like no other game you had played before when it came out. Doom existed, and that is a 3D game that was a big deal and has a lot going on, but it didn't control like this. Sonic 3D Blast was out, and we will talk about that game in air quotes you can't see.
Oh, wait. Sonic 3D Blast? Oh.
Are you realizing what game this is?
No, I got it confused with Sonic Boom.
Oh, Sonic Boom is a... Sonic Boom, we don't have time for Sonic Boom.
Will we ever have time for Sonic Boom?
Maybe one day. My, you know, man crush and person I want to be, Chris Sims, current, like, long-term project is he's reading all of the Archie Sonic comics from the year, I want to say, 2005 onward, and trying to figure out how Sonic works.
How is he liking that? Because I know some
Shadow
people...
the Hedgehog is his favorite character, and he is so confused that that is a sentence he has said, and Amy Rose is his second favorite, and he doesn't know what's going on.
I can see that.
It's basically how he feels. And also, why is Sonic going to turn into a werewolf? I don't understand, but would it just happen already? So I maybe would understand. That's how he feels about that. This game is better than Sonic Boom.
Or Sonic 3D Blast.
I've never played Sonic Boom or Sonic 3D Blast, so I would reserve judgment.
Oh, I haven't played Sonic Boom either, but I can guarantee this game you will like more than Sonic 3D Blast. This game knows what a camera is and what 3D is.
And that pretty much sums it up. This game knows what 3D is.
But the other big hook, like I said, was the tech spectacle. This game is kind of a tech demo for the N64, but not a tech demo for producers, a tech demo for consumers. This is a console seller, and one that I think was fairly effective. It was so much bigger and better than any game before it, but it doesn't have that anymore.
This was a tech demo?
Well, sort of. For, like I said, for the audience. It's showing what 3D looks like on a video game, because we really haven't seen that before.
Okay, the only one that because I was thinking of, when you mentioned tech demo, I was thinking of PsyOps, which was the demonstration slash...
That's a physics engine demo.
Yeah, that was basically the tech demo for the Havoc engine.
Yeah, and this is for the N64's graphic engine, what it can do, how big you can make levels, the load times, or rather lack thereof, compared to the PlayStation.
It was basically...
Save files, which were a thing on the Super Nintendo, but they were pretty spotty on the Genesis.
The levels didn't feel that big to me, but...
No, they don't anymore. They're really tiny by modern standards, but if you compare them to, like, 2D games, they're still not as big as, like, a side-scroller, but they can go out. So,
well, I was actually comparing it to Doom, and the levels aren't as big as they are in Doom.
I feel like they're actually about as big. The thing is that Doom has a lot more walls, so there's, like, it's denser. There's a lot more to explore because you can't
Doom
see
has a lot more hallways,
all once,
right?
Yeah, I get, and there's more stuff in it.
Exactly. Like I said, Doom is more dense.
Doom is denser. Okay, yeah, I will agree with that.
I guess that makes sense because there's actually a lot of stuff to fight in Doom. And
one of the things about this game, it gives you way more hit points than you need because most people didn't really understand how to walk in 3D. And even with how sparse the enemies were, saying it was harder at the time is weird, but because you didn't really know the rules of navigation, it kind of was. You would make mistakes that a modern video game player would just never make.
I made plenty of mistakes trying to play the first level. Namely, I made mistakes in judging where things were because the camera was at war with me.
Well, there's a little bit of that, too. Shall we go on to the camera? Because it's one of the game's major points.
Yeah.
The camera is basically what you'd imagine for a modern 3D camera, except for it's more analog. There are only four positions it can be in, or it can be following directly behind you.
I think it's only got three. I kept trying to use the
C-stick to
other joystick to maneuver it. You can do that on the Wii U gamepad, but it doesn't work very well because it's only got the four or the presets.
Yeah, it doesn't have the nice, like...
It's not, like I said, it's analog. It's only got the four positions. It doesn't have... It's not like the modern, like, smooth...
Full control.
That would be more digital as opposed to the modern analog.
I guess that's
true. Because digital is, like,
that's what I meant. You are correct. I was misusing the term.
But it doesn't have the full 360, 180 degrees type of control that we're used to now, which is why I was at war with the camera for most of the time I was trying to play the game.
Yeah, and I tended to just, like, pick one position, and it just sat there the entire time.
Well, a bunch of times I tried to look past Mario.
The game also lets you go into a first-person mode and look around. It's not very useful. It pauses the action.
I couldn't figure out which button that was.
Up on the...
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, on the control stick.
Because for that must have been, like, the one button I didn't try, because I could not figure out for the life of me how to get it into first person.
which isn't super useful. Like, there, the only time I needed to do that is because the camera was failing me and I couldn't see what I was
doing. And Mario's big fat ass was in the way.
Yeah.
It's although, also occasionally useful for looking down, like, ledges and stuff and seeing if I jump out of this, can I land there or am I going to fall?
Yeah.
But it's not frequently very helpful. It is a cool feature because it lets you see the detailed environments, which, again, for the time looked amazing. Now they look blocky and they have a nice cartoon aesthetic to them. They hold up all right. But, you know, it's nothing, it's not a selling point for the game anymore.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
but,
for sure.
Oh, the polygons, they are there.
Mario's cube of a nose.
Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of Mario's fat ass, I think on the second world, Thwomp's Castle, there's an owl who will carry you up to, like, a cage if you wake it up from the tree, and while it's flying you there, it's complaining about how fat you are. It's like, you should lay off the pasta, because seriously, man, I'm not doing this ever again.
So the thrust of the gameplay is you go to these various worlds within the overworld, which is Peach's castle. You start in, like, the courtyard, which is just kind of a place for you to play around and familiarize yourself with the controls.
Introduce yourself to Lakitu, who is your cameraman.
Yeah, they
and
personify
you will want
the camera.
To kill him by the end of the game.
They
I wanted to kill him by the end of the first level.
Lakitu, my sweet ass, it's not in frame.
There's also a moat and a pond, so you can play around with the water controls. They're not perfect, but they're probably the best Mario has ever felt underwater. In part, that's because there aren't a lot of underwater threats. Most of the ones are kind of set pieces that instead of coming after you, will just travel in a pattern.
I don't know, the Mario 3 controlled pretty
okay,
well
Okay, with the
water.
Frog suit. With the frog suit power-up, it does.
Yes.
I was thinking without that. You really need that power-up for the water.
And actually,
there.
that's a good point, because this actually feels a lot like having the frog suit all the time, just in 3D. You move more or less in the same manner.
You don't have an oxygen meter, which leads to this weird thing where your health depletes while you're underwater, and if you reach the top and take a breath, your health fully refills. So, like, ponds are a way to refill your health, which is kind of weird conceptually.
Huh.
But, you know, you just take a swim, you relax, and you're okay now.
Yeah, I mean, the just other... so long as nobody deletes the ladders.
Mario is not a sim. He's too low poly for that.
But unlike previous Mario games, your goal isn't to get through levels. It's to find stars, which are objectives scattered around levels. There are six per level.
Which kind of gave rise to the whole genre of 3D platformers, which was, like, things you explore while jumping around and trying to find things.
And a console generation later said genre was dead.
It really took two. Jak and Daxter is a PS2 game that got really good reviews. Ratchet and Clank, for some reason, started out as one of those before becoming a third-person shooter.
I actually like Jak and Daxter fairly well.
My brother likes Jak and Daxter.
Mario Sunshine, well, not nearly as good as this game, is on the next console generation.
It's
really two generations later that it kind of fell apart.
I never really liked the whole scavenger hunt as an entire game genre.
And here, I think it obviously came from in Super Mario World, you had the hidden exits, and in lots of ways, finding those was the game. But those were also just alternate ways to beat the level. They still let you advance in different ways. I think it also came from they were really worried about making the movement feel good. And it does for the most part. It's not perfect, but you have lots of different movement options. Some of them taken from the Game Boy Donkey Kong, like the flip and such.
I don't think the acceleration where you build up speed actually feels all that good. It's actually kind of annoying. When you're starting from a standstill, yeah. And then you have to build up speed.
It is kind of a hallmark of Mario games, though, because he's always had to kind of build up speed. It's not nearly like Sonic levels of building up speed. But
yeah, but in 3D, it feels a lot more obnoxious, especially because you don't have the fine control. That's one thing that I think this game got really, really hurt by, and that's one of the reasons why it doesn't hold up so well, is because it was only on the single stick and doesn't have fine control over its camera, so it becomes a little bit less about manipulating and moving your character around and more of aiming in a general direction and saying, go,
that's
I hope
actually,
I don't run into anything.
I hadn't thought of it before, but that's actually remarkably accurate. Well, especially in, like, later 3D platformers. Actually, Banjo-Kazooie is a great example. It's not just stop-go. You do actually have speeds. And there isn't an acceleration time. You just go. If you push the stick forward, whatever your current state is, that's as fast as you're going to be going. And
I think in Banjo-Kazooie, you have basically a fast walking, right?
Yeah.
Which is a move. You just say, I'm going to go fast or I'm going to go normal. And there are situations where the normal move speed is more useful. But I think that the reason they made this the scavenger hunt thing is because you're moving around in a 3D space, they wanted to make that the gameplay. So they made goals that are in a 3D space.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, that just like every other game developer was like...
Because Mario 64 sold like crack.
Okay, fair
this
enough.
This was a very popular, very successful game. Like, and obviously you copy that. And people were used to copying Mario.
And, I mean, nowadays, that idea is just a piece, like the mini-map of 3D games.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, consider Skyrim, right? Like, there's so much to do, or I guess really any Elder Scrolls game.
I would more compare it to something like Black
Ubisoft
Flag.
Games? Yeah.
Yeah. Where you have your goal in the open world, but there's all this other junk, like the sea shanties and the treasure chest that you can find.
I actually think that's to both genres' detriment, to be honest, because finding stuff in Black Flag is okay, especially the sea shanties, because they fly away and you get to do the parkour stuff to chase them.
They were just the ones I remembered.
But yeah, but you remember them because they're the interesting one. Most of them are just kind of you find on the map, and that's not very interesting. They're just sort of things to justify how big the map is. They can put something there. They're not usually very interesting to find.
It does seem like the logical evolution of it, though, right?
Yes, it does. But I'm excited for Yooka-Laylee because it's a return to this style. And I don't think we could survive one of these types of games, like, even once a year. But something where the focus is on where do we hide this thing to make it interesting to collect, that's much more interesting to me than playing a Assassin's Creed game. And
because, like, having the bounded level means you have a limited space. It's like playing hide and seek, right? Like, this place is off limits because it's too large. It's going to take forever. I don't want to go hunt you down, Templar.
I think I talked about this on Banjo-Kazooie, but that's what I actually think this killed this genre, was not 3D games just, like, stealing the stuff from it. It wasn't GTA 3 putting the packages in their game and having that too. It was worlds getting so big that they just felt even less dense than this did. And it just kind of felt like you got lost. That's what I think killed this genre more
than
anything.
I think those are being fixed now. A lot of the open world games feel like there's a lot more stuff in them now.
I think they're getting better at it. I think we expanded too far, and I think now people are realizing, like, having a giant ass map doesn't do anything if there's nothing in your giant ass map.
I think the maps have gotten bigger, but people have had processing power catch up to them. So now there's actually stuff in that big map too.
Yep.
Like, look at the Just Cause games. There's a lot of space on those maps, and there's a lot of stuff in those maps.
That's an interesting thing to bring up, though, because the thing about Just Cause is playing the story mode or doing the collection isn't really fun. What's fun is, like, the GTA 3 thing of just shooting something with a rocket launcher and seeing how much you can deal with. And in Just Cause, they just provide you lots of different locations to basically shoot with a rocket launcher and have stuff come at you. Just playing Just Cause is its own reward, which is really cool. And the open world just becomes letting you choose your battlefield, for lack of a better term, more than having lots of interesting stuff. The interesting stuff comes to you in Just Cause, but we're getting a little off the mark. What do we want to say about this game? It's the basic scavenger hunt collection, like Zach was alluding to. You get enough stars, that lets you unlock more stuff in the overworld, which is also pretty compact. I know you don't like overworld, Zach, kind of as a rule. I know.
I've never said that.
Yeah, well, I don't remember you.
I remember our talk
actually.
About ODST. You basically say it's the worst Halo because it has that overworld.
No, the reason why the overworld is bad in ODST is because it's an overworld, it's an open world, and there's nothing in it because it's all taking place at night. You run into enemies very infrequently, so there's just a lot of walking from point A to point B.
Kind of the problem people had with Skyloft in Skyward Sword,
right? It's the same problem I have with Space Hulk Deathwing that came out last year, is there's a lot of walking in this big environment, but there's nothing interesting in it. That's the problem I have with people when they do overworlds, is here's this overworld, it's really interesting, and then it's like, no, it's not.
And I feel like this overworld is very compact. Basically, everything has a purpose. Some of the things, unfortunately, you don't unlock their purpose until later. And in particular, the little, like, garden area. I don't know if you went
with
to that part, Zach.
I didn't. I was trying to find the first painting. Honestly, walking in to that first area, and there's somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 10 to 15 doors.
I think it's 6, but
it felt like a lot more than that.
It's quite a few.
But I walked
It might actually be 10, thinking
and
about
it. Picked a door because I thought that was where I was supposed to go. Wasn't there, and then I picked another door and wasn't there, and then I picked a third door and finally found it. I mean, I exaggerate the amount of time it took me to do this, but I was able to find it in a pretty reasonable amount of time.
And you went through all the possible failure points, basically.
Yeah, even screwing up a couple of times, I was still able to find the level I was actually trying to find.
It's weird that those two doors are accessible at the start of the game when there's nothing behind them until later.
Especially since the other ones are blocked off.
We should also talk about coins, since they're a paraphernalia of Mario games that kind of... They almost seem like they didn't know what to do with them in this one.
What are they for?
They restore your health.
Okay.
And also, if you get 100 of them, you get a star.
Yeah,
in a level.
Every level is a... or has the 100 coin star. So...
I think I got like 27.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them you have to like really go digging for them. There are blue coins which are worth 5. I always get excited when I see them.
I found some red coins.
Yeah, and if you get all 8 red coins on a level, that's also a star.
Yeah, so now I'm thinking about it, too. Is it 6 stars per world?
7 if you count the 100th star.
2 out of 7 stars are collect some coins.
That's one thing that I don't like about those. You need to find X amount of stars, which basically means you have to go back to these other levels and then scavenger hunt through all the coins that you can possibly find hope to find the right
You can
players.
Actually go through the game without actually doing any of the coin collections. It's just
you need 70 out of 120 stars to beat this game. So there's a lot of optional stuff, and you can skip that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you can basically pick and choose which ones you want to do, or which ones you can figure out.
And I actually like the idea of you can go back to easier levels, because generally, once you unlock new levels, you kind of want to see if there's anything new and exciting. So I like the idea that you can then, later, if you get stuck, go back to the easier ones, sort of with probably some new tricks you've developed doing the harder stuff, and see what you can find now that you have a fresh perspective.
There are some neat elements of this game. It's got some quirky stuff that I kind of like.
It's got a lot of polish, right? Like, if you just leave it for a couple minutes, Mario will start taking a nap, and there's animations for that. There's lots of small animations they didn't need to put in there.
Yeah, and a couple, like, I really liked chasing the rabbit around. I actually remember as a kid recording myself trying to chase the rabbit around the basement, which is just, you know, another star.
It's kind of a cool thing, because it's unlocked at a certain point, and then there's just suddenly this thing running away from you. It's got a lot of stuff like that. It translates all the basic worlds, your lava world, your ice world, your sky world, your water world, into a 3D space. And all of them are pretty good examples of how to do those sorts of worlds. The water world isn't that annoying.
Isn't that annoying? I mean, it's probably...
Well, considering water world's general reputation with gamers as the worst thing people can possibly do to me.
And there are 2 ice worlds, and they're both pretty good.
I actually feel like there are 2 water worlds in this, too, right? Because there's the one with the sub, and then
Does
there's
either
the
one star Kevin Costner?
No. No Mario peeing into a bucket.
Then the lava level is one of my favorite levels in, like, a video game. I really like the ideas there. It's really compact. There's some cool stuff. The Egypt level is really good, too, where you go into the pyramid and have to, like, fight mummies.
I think, like, we were talking, just not quite dense enough. There's a lot of, like, space between puzzles that makes them feel disconnected from each other. Well,
my problem was, at least on that first level, there are a few enemies, like bombs and Goombas on the level, but they're, like, sectioned off. There's a few Goombas over there, and then there's a few bombs over there, and it's like...
And to be fair, that is supposed to be, like, Baby's first 3D level, which is probably why you found it boring.
But even... It doesn't get too much better, though.
Yeah.
And they're really playing with the kids' glove because they don't want to scare people away from 3D gaming. The reason that the N64 is that abomination of a controller is Nintendo was a little bit afraid that people wouldn't want to risk making 3D games, and they wanted to give them that D-pad if they wanted to make the old stuff still. Okay, so we talked about the movement not being super precise, but one of the nice things about that kind of is that means there's lots of tricks you can do and lots of challenges you can bypass. Which is why this game has a pretty good speedrun community. It has all the things you need for that. Like, there are just lots of tricks, and if you're talented at the game, you can just do a lot.
Even one of my favorite ways of moving around in this game is just constantly long jumping. If you have a certain amount of momentum, you'll just go, and then you preserve that little bit of the momentum for a second when you land, so you can just long jump everywhere.
And that gives an extra dimension to this game that's kind of unintended, and I think boosts it quite a bit, but that's not something a beginner is going to see. That's something that I think is most interesting to people who played it as kids and then are coming back to it and realize all this cool stuff. But I think it adds a lot of dimensionality that most of these 3D platformers don't actually have because they're tighter and they work very hard to make sure you don't, for lack of better terms, cheat through their content. This game doesn't care about that as much if you're good enough to do it. And that's very similar to Super Metroid, that specifically has, like, breakpoints, which things you're not supposed to be able to do, but if you can do them, the game lets you get away with it.
Whether you realize it or not, there's actually in Metroid Fusion has one of my favorite examples of this. During the design process, realized that there were 2 places you could sequence break, and instead of taking them out, they basically said, "Yeah, we'll let them do it. In fact, since we noticed it, we'll just comment on the fact that they did it."
Well, yeah, Arkham Asylum actually does that, too. It's kind of harder to see because it's a little more sealed up than other games, but lots of times there are places where you can sequence break just a little bit and the Joker will comment on it.
Huh, did not know that.
But how exactly does that stack up for Metroid Other M?
that gem of a game in the Metroid series.
You know,
series.
I've never played Other M, and I wonder if it just got...
People say the gameplay isn't too bad.
Yeah, no, I've heard the gameplay is all right. It's mostly just, like, they gave Samus not the character
the problem,
that she's established.
The story is terrible, and the gameplay isn't what people wanted. It's not bad for what it is, but it's not like, when you think of a Metroid game, that's not what you're looking for.
That is true. Anymore, I'm looking for more Metroid Prime, and they're not giving it to me.
So one last thing I want to say about this game. It doesn't have the traditional Mario power-ups. You can't grow big, but it does have three that you unlock in similar ways through the switches in Super Mario World.
Which Jeremy informed me before we started recording are apparently completely optional. I never realized that.
Yeah, and they're all in kind of secret areas in the castle. They're super obvious to me now, and I don't know how much of that is me doing them before. But like the one of them, as a kid, when I figured it out, I felt really stupid for not realizing it before. One of them, I tried as a kid and I just messed up somehow, and so I was convinced that wasn't how you do it, when it is. And the third one, I just got as a kid my first try.
What was it, the wall kick up thing?
No,
or
you have to ground pound something.
Do you have to unlock ground pounding, or was
no.
I just doing it wrong?
AZ. Or that's, it's probably AR or AL on
okay,
the
Okay, that'd be
controller.
Why. I was trying to do AB or something like that.
So there's an invisibility cap that just lets you walk through certain substances. It basically just unlocks extra areas and makes you invincible.
I mean, it's pretty obvious which things you can walk through while wearing it, and I'm not sure how they telegraph that.
A lot of them are wire mesh, and the other ones are blue.
Yep, that's true.
And you also see the booze going through the blue ones, so that kind of helps to telegraph it. There's the metal cap, which is kind of stuck around, not in a lot of games, but in a lot of Mario-adjacent media.
Like Smash Brothers and stuff like that?
Yeah, which also just makes you invulnerable, but the same way the stars do, in that they will boot things away. And they also make you sink to the bottom of a water and makes it so you don't need air.
It also makes you heavier. That comes into play, I think, once or maybe twice.
There are a couple stars where you need to go through a jet stream or something, and being heavier helps you. And then there's the wing cap, which lets you fly around.
Easily the coolest.
It's limited flight like the cape in Super Mario World, but it's a lot more useful in this 3D area where they can stick sort of air islands around and have vertical places you want to climb up to. Like I said, it's pretty hard for me to comment on this game because it's as easy for breathing for me. You know that thing where you're like driving somewhere where you drive all the time and you kind of lose track of time and you're not sure how you got to a place? I had that playing this game, and I would get multiple stars and then just not really realize how I got there.
While all the content feels fresh in each world, it's all very similar, and I think that's part of what helps it not hold up super well, is it all feels very similar to itself.
You fight Bowser 3 times in this game, but it's the same mechanic every time. You grab him by his tail and throw him into bombs. It's pretty fun, and it was pretty much the same in the original Mario game each time you fought him, but it does feel like maybe something fresh and exciting each time would have been nicer.
And I think the worlds that do that have stood out so, or that have been, migrated onward in Mario history are the ones that stood out in the first place because they were either exceptionally difficult or, like, had weird mechanics. Rainbow Ride, the one where you're, like, on the floating skyship. I mean, that one got kept around because it's weird.
The last two levels are both really cool and pretty difficult. TikTok Clock, which, depending on how you enter it, the stuff in the clock moves at different rates.
It's depending on the time displayed on the clock, right?
Yeah, and that's a super vertical level as well, which makes it really interesting. But a lot of the worlds are just kind of baby's first platformer levels where there are some bombs over there, but you don't even need to be over there. So my final thought is I find it to be a very interesting game, and I think it's a very important game, and I do recommend that you play it, but it's not going to be the first game I recommend to someone, and it's not going to be a game I recommend to everybody either.
Obsolete, outdated, boring as hell. Duck this one.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I don't know. A long time ago, I made the argument that I thought this game was better than Banjo-Kazooie because I thought, in my head, the controls were tighter and the level design was better. And having replayed it again, I'm like, this is one of the first obvious cases of nostalgia filter that I feel I've encountered on this podcast. So
I definitely don't think it's better than Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah,
it's
and I think not. I now agree that it is almost definitely not better than Banjo-Kazooie.
All right, so we have a list that contains Banjo-Kazooie at our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. And that is a list of the games we've played from best to worst. At the top is Chrono Trigger, also a game with a guy who wears a costume. Man, that was not good at all. At the bottom is Echo the Dolphin. If you want to talk about a boring game, there's one for you.
That was obtuse.
It's both boring and difficult. I'm not sure how they accomplished that.
And in the middle is Excitebike. I wanted to start comparing this to Super Mario World, but we've already pretty much said it's worse than Banjo-Kazooie, which is lower. So should we start there and go down?
I mean, my comparison to Super Mario World, it's a less engaging game overall.
Yeah, right? Super Mario World's just a lot more polished. I said that this isn't a game I would recommend to everybody that's difficult because it doesn't hold up. Super Mario World isn't that at all. If someone was like, I've never played a Mario game, which one should I play? It would be Super Mario World before they even finish the question. It's by far the best in the series. And this will also put it below Super Mario Brothers 3,
although,
which I feel less strongly about, but I also think is probably accurate. That game holds up better.
I actually think for modern gamers, I think Galaxy 2 would be the one I would recommend.
How do we think it compares to the original Super Mario Brothers, another very important, innovative game?
So if you had asked me like 10 years ago, I would have said Mario 64. Anymore, I actually think I like the original Super Mario Brothers better.
I just think it holds up a little better.
It's more challenging, if nothing else. I guess it's more interesting because it is challenging. Mario 64 doesn't have tightly designed levels because that's not the point. Like, it's not necessarily an execution challenge, or rather it was supposed to be an execution challenge for people who didn't know how to execute in that environment.
All right, so going down a bit, we have Shantae. That's where I don't want to say draw the line, but I feel like Super Mario Brothers is better than Shantae. But that said,
I agree,
you both,
but that's
like
not the game
Shantae
we're talking about.
More than I do? Or I think Super Mario 64 is better than Shantae. How's that? But you guys both like that game more than I do. So what are your thoughts there?
I think Shantae is a better game.
I think Shantae is a more memorable game.
I feel like the challenges in Shantae aren't very good, to be honest. Like, as much as the ones here aren't very precise, I feel like they're pretty well designed. When we talk about the challenges in Shantae, I'm thinking of the enemies, and I just never found any of them very engaging or interesting. Whereas I do find wall jumps interesting, for lack of a better term.
I guess my problem with Shantae is a lot of the enemies are just, frankly, bull. They're just, like, terribly designed.
Mario enemies are just plain boring.
Yeah, I know, but like, would you rather have something that's like you literally die every time you're on screen with them because they can attack you when they're off screen and you can't get past them?
I'd rather have an option of learning how to deal with the problem rather than being the exact same thing I've been dealing with since Mario 1 came out.
I think it's a different challenge in Mario 64, an easier challenge, so maybe not that great.
It's not even a challenge. The biggest challenge in Mario 64 about the enemies you're dealing with is figuring out exactly where in the 3D space they exist.
Yeah, but the enemies aren't meant to be a challenge, and it is kind of too bad that they don't add to the challenge. The only thing that really does that are the rolling balls that will fall on you, and those aren't really enemies.
I like Shantae a lot, and I really think the second game is going to be better, but I don't think it's better than Mario 64.
How do we think it compares to Castlevania Rondo of Blood?
I really like Rondo of
Ryu
Blood.
Ryu Belmont?
Yes.
Yeah, Ryu Belmont, Rondo of Blood. Dovedoken.
It does have Maria. You cannot unlock Peach and float around in this one. And certainly the enemies are more interesting.
I think Rondo of Blood's more fun, so I'm going to go with Rondo of Blood.
Yeah, I also think Rondo of Blood is better. What do we think about comparing it to Mega Man X2? X2 has that kind of disappointing
ending.
Oh,
yeah. I think even with the system and hardware problems that Mega Man X2 had, it's more interesting and is a lot easier on the eyes.
A lot easier on the eyes, I'll give you that. But also, I don't want to say it was kind of boring, but it didn't really innovate at all, and that was my problem with it. Air dashing in it was pretty fun, but this game innovates a lot, and for that reason, I think it deserves to go a bit higher. I would still probably recommend Mega Man X2 over this, but I think Mario 64 ranks a bit higher. Tyler?
Based on like the influence argument, which we've given to a couple games, I would give it that. I really think that X2 is the probably better game overall, but like you said, it didn't really like do anything for advancing the genre or anything. Like, Mega Man X did a lot.
Yeah, and I would recommend Mega Man X well before this game, but Mega Man X2 versus Mario 64, I think Mario 64 is genuinely more interesting.
I mean, I would give it to it, but only very slightly.
So how about our favorite thing to compare video games to?
Apparently.
Uncharted Waters New Horizons.
Like, how did I know that was coming? If it's not on the low side and isn't being compared to Mortal Kombat or something, it's being compared
Waters
to Uncharted
is
Horizons.
Such an interesting game, though.
I think Uncharted Horizons is a better game.
Uncharted Waters has that terrible combat we like to rag it on every once in a while, and that awesome trading that always gives boosts.
Mario's also got terrible combat.
I feel like Mario, like, slides the middle more, though, because the bosses in Mario are still pretty interesting to fight.
Unfortunately, they're the, like, only interesting thing to fight, although that's not really the point of Mario 64.
And the world of New Horizons is far more interesting than the slight pieces.
Pirate-ish Spain versus here's some bombs, and here's some lava, and here's some Egypt.
Yeah.
Here's some Egypt.
Because you can go to Egypt and bankrupt them.
Yeah. Or get bankrupted by them. I bought a bunch of fish off of one place, and no one wanted to buy it. I'm like, why did you guys sell me all the shoddy fish?
They're like, because no one wanted to buy it, but you're dumbass.
Although, I do remember fondly my ships named the Refrigerator, the Pantry, and the Larder.
Wasn't one of yours called the Food, Jeremy?
The Food?
Yeah, the USS Food, the USS Food 2. It was the USS Food. Thank you.
I guess I have more fun with Mario 64, and based purely on influence, that's certainly more influential, because, like, sadly, no one took a page from Uncharted Waters' book and made, like, a really cool, yep, expansive RPG like that, other than other new or Uncharted Waters games. So yeah,
I think I agree. It's very, very slight, but I think Mario 64 pretty much succeeds on most of the things it attempts. Uncharted Waters succeeds massively on some stuff and fails on other points.
Yeah, frankly, fails pretty massively because, like, man, if they could revamp that combat system into proper broadside ship combat and, like, not stupid, just, like, duel the captain to death.
Okay, so weird question. Is it better or worse than last week's game, Advanced Wars? I feel like the multiplayer aspect of Advanced Wars kind of makes it hold up better, but I also have no interest in replaying it, whereas I think Mario 64 has a good amount of replayability thanks to the movement mechanics.
Just the base mechanics and whatnot of Advanced Wars make it far more interesting to me, and I think is a better game than Mario, especially with the multiplayer aspect of it.
Yeah, and I would have to give it to Advanced Wars, if only because it makes you think a lot more, and it's definitely something that, like, I would say, hey, go and pick up this game, especially if you've never played a strategy game before. It's a good place to start. If you're looking to start playing, like, 3D movement games of any sort, I would not say that Mario 64 is the place to start.
So Super Mario 64 goes at number 36, below Advanced Wars and above Uncharted Waters New Horizons. That's weird because Advanced Wars and Uncharted Waters seem like they should go together, but now they make a Mario sandwich.
That would taste terrible, as Mario is a plumber. He probably Mamma tastes mia! Like...
So, Zach, what are Literally. We tasting next week?
Well, I figure it's been a while since we've played any kind of strategy game. And unfortunately, Grand Theft Auto is not available on Steam.
That is sad.
That's a strategy game, isn't
it? It's listed on Steam, but you can't actually buy it.
Huh.
And there's no download link or anything like that.
Huh. Odd.
I mean, the game might be listed as freeware at this point. I'm talking about the original GTA.
Yeah, you should look into that. I would like to play that, because I think GTA 3 is a super, super important game.
I think we're going to go for a game released in 2003, so just on the
verge.
That's
very recent.
It's about the same as Advance Wars was.
True.
It's pretty close, anyway. We're going to go with Impossible Creatures.
Okay.
What?
I thought that was a much older game when you described it to me.
So did I, but evidently it was 03.
Where is that available?
Steam and GOG.
Okay. It's a strategy game about impossible creatures. That box art looks 1990 as
heck. It really does. Like, I know. Like such a bad Photoshop right there.
It is. This is going to be bad.
So next time on Last Time, I activate polymerization.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2017. All video games and other media mentioned herein are copyright their respective owners. If you'd like to get in touch with us, drop us a line at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com or hit us up on our website at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, where we keep all the episodes and a bunch of other stuff for you to go look at. Bowser bomb to the face. It's game over. I'm going to sound like a rock guitar at the end of this.
Wow, 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 wow.